Welcome to Late Night Writers. On this episode, we talk to Peggy Brown.
Talk about an accomplished writer in centered writing. She is the highest level instructor. She travels abroad and does her clinics abroad. This woman has ridden with the pyramids behind her in Cairo with the palm trees, and also in Japan and China. You talk about an interesting person and well accomplished. It's Peggy Brown.
If you've ever seen the horse with all of the muscles drawn on it and a person in a skeleton suit riding it, that is her. That is her.
And she teaches you how to ride so balanced through that. She's extremely interesting and very, very knowledgeable, and somebody that I know everyone will love to listen to.
So enjoy. Welcome to Late Night Writers. I'm Gretchen, and I'm joined by my mom, Kristen, and Grandma Debbie, and Peggy Brown.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hey.
So Peggy is a certified level 4 centered writing and driving clinician. And could you tell us a little bit more about centered writing and what that is?
Centered writing was developed by a woman from Vermont, Sally Swift. And Sally, from a very young age, had a severe disability. Her parents were told their little girl would never walk again and never ride a horse. Oh, they think it was undiagnosed polio. Sally was born back in the 1920s. In fact, her birthday's coming up. She would be 106 if she were alive today. But her mother was a very progressive woman and got her little girl back on a horse. And they hired special body workers to work with the child, which was unusual in the 1920s. And because of this, Sally was able to live a normal life, teach horseback riding. She rode horses till she was 80. And what she learned in this journey of having a disability and a severe scoliosis were many of the things that she put into her books, Centered Riding and Centered Riding 2. She wrote Centered Riding when she was almost 70 years old. Centered Riding 2, she wrote at age 90.
Oh,
when I first
goodness.
Visited her, just before her 96th birthday, she was working on her third book.
You did get to see her then and visit her. I wondered you did on her third book.
On her third book. Can you imagine that at age 96?
That's
awesome. Crazy.
That's neat.
That's awesome.
Wow.
So Centered Riding talks about how our minds affect our bodies and how our minds and our bodies affect the horse's body. Sally was very progressive in the horse world because the first book talked about how the rider's body works. A buzzword we hear today are rider biomechanics. Mm-hmm. But at that time, nobody talked about how the rider's body worked. Instead, riding instructors came from the military, and they would bark out orders. Sit up straight, shoulders back, heels down. But they didn't help people understand how to use their bodies. Mm-hmm. The other thing that the book did was it was the first horse book to talk about sports psychology. And Sally used a lot of pictures and images. Mm-hmm. So the first book was actually probably the best-selling horse book worldwide. It's been translated into 14 different languages. Wow. So, fascinating woman. I spent a lot of time with her while she was alive.
How wonderful. I read her book several years ago, the Centered Riding book, and still today remember many things from that book, even though I haven't referred to it for a while, but, you know, the most basic string on the head, and things like that. It was easy to visualize what she was saying by how she explained it. So I bet you got so many good, interesting things from her to meet her and talk to her.
She's an amazing, amazing woman.
So did your training from her, was it just learning from her and you became a trainer, or did you have to go through a course that she did, or how did that work?
It was really funny. I met Sally at a convention in New Jersey, and I found out she was doing a clinic the next weekend in Vermont. So I drove home from New Jersey, said to my husband, who's a horseman too, I said, Sally Swift's doing a clinic next weekend, and she's 80 years old. Oh, and at 80, you know, you just don't know. And so we got in the car and drove to Vermont and went to our very first open clinic. And little did I know that that would begin a journey that lasted many, many years. And I drove back and forth to Vermont sometimes five, six times a year to have the opportunity to work with Sally and some of the other centered riding instructors.
Wow, that is really interesting. That's neat. Wow. I know that you work with many, many people locally. I know many people that know you. But how far out do you actually go to train or teach then, Peggy?
I actually do most of my work overseas. I don't really do too many clinics in the United States, believe it or not.
Wow.
So I just got back from a clinic in Israel. I have a large number of instructors that I work with in Japan. I'm leaving a week from tomorrow to do a tour in Europe where I'll be going to Holland and a number of clinics in near Vienna, Austria.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Wow. My goodness. So your clinics are mainly, you said, overseas. And what type of clinics? Is it basically all the centered riding that you do? Or?
Well, I do a lot of instructor certification clinics. So I'm a teacher of teacher.
Oh, wow.
And what that means is that I start the process for certifying instructors to teach with Sally Swift's centered riding methods. Mm-hmm. But I also, through another demonstration that I do with Susan Harris, Anatomy in Motion, I do rider and horse biomechanic clinics. I also do centered driving clinics because I'm a very active carriage driver and combined driver. Mm-hmm. And I can customize almost any type of a clinic. Mm-hmm. I've had experience in every discipline except for saddle seat. So I have not done much saddle seat work.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about your anatomy in motion and what that looks like?
Mm-hmm. Susan Harris, who really was my mentor in centered riding, and is a well-known author and illustrator of horse books, especially the Pony Club manuals.
Yeah.
But also her bestseller, Horse Gates, Balance, and Movement, which is a superb book. Sue got the bright idea that she could take a white horse, paint the muscles on one side of the horse and the skeleton on the other side. And we actually worked together at the first Equitana that they had in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that was 1996, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was working so well, we decided to shoot a DVD, and we were going to go to Australia because it was cheaper to do in Australia. And we thought, well, if this is working so well on the horse, why don't we try it with the rider?
Yeah.
And so the Visible Rider was born, and that's me wearing a black kind of a leotard with my bones painted on it, and then I ride and talk about good rider biomechanics, and the horse will show the audience very clearly when I'm riding correctly or when I'm riding incorrectly, and so many people come up after that demo and say, that's what my instructor says I do, but I didn't know what it was till I saw it. So it's talking to people about how the rider's body needs to work on a horse, and also talking to instructors and judges and parents about how to avoid sports injuries, especially in children. And by sports injuries, I'm not talking about falls or accidents. I'm talking about repetitive misuse of the body that begins to tear up joints and create problems in people, especially back and knee problems.
And that is a problem as time goes on, even though we don't think so when we're younger, but it is. So that makes a big difference. Yes, it does. To be able to ride until you're at least 80.
Oh, so,
yeah. Yes.
And that's in a DVD that you have?
That's Anatomy in Motion, The Visible Rider
okay.
is me. And then we also have Anatomy in Motion, The Visible Horse.
Okay.
Nice. And we've done Visible Horse and Rider all over the world, Australia, Egypt, Asia, Europe. We've had a lot of fun with that in educating people. Yeah.
That's incredible. So how did you start into horses? What was your beginning? Did you have them your whole life or did you get them later?
I did not get a horse until I was 12 because we didn't live in the country at that time. but I did get a pony when I was 12, but it's been a passion for me as long as I can remember. That's Yay. All I ever wanted. So I, you know, when I was 12, I had read every horse book the library had, and I was all set to go.
Peggy, when did your parents know, like, realize that this was, like, something that was really important to you and they were on board with getting you a pony?
My mother had horses as a child, and so I think it was in the back of her mind. It was just getting to the point where I was old enough and strong enough to take care of a pony of my own. And the one thing that she wasn't very good about was riding lessons. So she basically, here's the pony, here's the equipment, you know, go.
Go. For it.
And so I really have learned very much from the school of hard knocks. If there's the wrong thing to do with the horse, I have done it. And, but I think that was actually, it was useful because my parents turned me loose with that pony, and I rode that pony all over Maumee and Monclova and Holland.
That's what
no
we used
one
to do.
Knew where I was. No supervision. I galloped as fast as that pony could go up and down Reynolds Road before the mall was there.
Yeah.
I think that really empowered me as a rider and also as a horsewoman, that there really wasn't a lot of fear. There weren't limits. If I fell off, you know, you got back on and you cry. That's so right.
Yep.
It's a different world today.
That's right. So did you continue with that then, or did you take a break to go to college? Did you always have a horse after that?
I've always had horses ever since that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So in 2005, you were honored as Riding Instructor of the Year. How, like, what led up to that? What were you doing before that?
I have taught horseback riding really since I was in college. And so I've been very active in the Toledo community, particularly in 4-H, because 4-H was what gave me my start with horses. I was fortunate enough to be in a club with some very educated horsewomen, and that's where I got my first lessons. So I believe that I needed to give back to that organization. And for that reason, and I think just the fact for my teaching, I was awarded that award from the American Riding Instructor Certification Program, which is a program I really believe in that tests and certifies riding instructors and raises the quality of professionalism in the instructor profession.
Yeah.
The United States is the only country that I know of in the world where anybody can hang a sign out and say riding lessons without any education or any background in safety or horses. And so I really believe in that program, and I was very honored to receive that award.
So you were talking about when you were little and riding and galloping, falling off and everything else. What is your theory, if you don't mind, on wearing a helmet or not wearing a helmet?
I strongly believe in always wearing a helmet. And I can remember battles I fought years ago in 4-H where parents did not want helmets required in contesting, and I remember the night a young lady went off and hit the fence so hard with her helmet that she cracked it. And from that day on, Lucas County always wore helmets.
I see.
So I am a very, very strong proponent of helmets. Also, safety vests in certain disciplines where you're likely to have an accident. And I'm very, very strong proponent of wearing boots. Mm-hmm. I am so tired of seeing people in tennis shoes riding or working around horses, mm-hmm. because once your foot is broken, it will never be the same again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And walking's a pretty important part of being alive.
That's right.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Do you mind if I ask you just a little question? You were talking about 4-H. Do you mind if I ask you what 4-H group you were in?
I was in the Anthony Wayne Trailblazers.
There you go. I remember that name.
Anthony Wayne Trailblazers is over 50 years strong in Lucas County.
Nice.
Yeah.
I remember those days, too, so that's very nice. Okay.
So at what point did you start traveling overseas?
When I started to assist Susan Harris, that would have been back in the 90s. We started to travel together to do anatomy in motion and centered riding clinics.
Was that new for you? Like, had you traveled in the past, or was that the first time going overseas?
No, I had traveled in the past. I've got a horse bug. I've also got a travel bug. and I love to travel. I can go anywhere in the world and find something interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I'm very interested in history and in art and mm-hmm. many different things. So it just fits really well for me.
Mm-hmm. And you've traveled quite a bit.
I do travel a lot, yeah.
Where is your favorite place to travel to when you're either doing clinics or traveling? Which one is some of your favorites? Maybe I should say that.
You know, I can go to New Jersey and find beautiful things. I think that I've worked quite a bit in Australia over the years, and I really do have a soft spot in my heart for Australians and that country. It's still sort of a frontier, and it's an exciting place to be and work. Mm-hmm. And those folks really have an eye for horses. They're nice. Just really amazing horse people. Mm. Yeah. But I was fortunate enough a few years ago to go to Cairo, Egypt, and got to ride and do a demonstration there. And to be riding an Arabian horse and being able to see the palm trees and the pyramids in the distance, I had to pinch myself and say,
"That's so cool.
What's a kid from Toledo, Ohio doing here?"
So how does that work? If somebody, you know, when you started this to advertise over there, or how did that all happen? Because this was before our big internet
thing, right? Yeah.
Well, was it or no?
Sue and I have had a website for quite a long time, and I think between that and word of mouth, or we'll meet people at expos. I remember an expo we were doing in Switzerland where we met a Japanese woman, and that led us to starting to go to Japan and do clinics in Japan. So it's just word of mouth. People are interested in what you're doing, and they tell other people.
Wow. Do you have, like, is there not a language barrier, but I mean, is it, how do you, how does that work when you're overseas and you're doing these clinics and things?
I have to have a translator in many countries, although in Europe, not quite so much anymore. But when you work with a translator, then you have to think very carefully about what words you're going to use and how you're going to pace your speaking. And then you have to remember what your train of thought was while they're translating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So that has taught me, I think, to be slower in my speech, more articulate, just more careful with how I use words and what I say, and helps people understand.
I would be so off track if I heard somebody have to wait and to speak and let them speak. That's
it's really tricky.
You're pretty skilled.
So not everybody can go overseas and train. I would assume that they would want you to be certified.
Yes, the foreign countries all would expect me to be a certified instructor. And then for the centered riding, I'm a level 4 centered riding instructor, which means I had to go through a great deal of training and apprenticeship, and it took quite a bit of time before I was able to become a level 4 teacher of teachers.
Wow. What does each level, like, qualify you to do? And is there a fifth level?
No.
Oh, you're at the top.
Yeah, level 4, the teacher of teachers, is the highest.
Wow. That's cool.
Level 3s may teach a clinic or do a demonstration at a horse expo. Level ones can teach centered riding and lessons, and they can use the logo, use the website for advertising. Level twos, it indicates that somebody has further time, further experience in centered riding. They're a little higher level, but they still are not allowed to teach centered riding clinics or do demos or large groups.
Mm-hmm. So can I ask, Peggy, if at this point, you being that level of a teacher and so forth for the centered riding now, how, since, you know, Sally Swift is not here, though, is there an organization where they certify? Are you the person who does that now, or how is that? How does that look now?
Centered Riding is a nonprofit, and Sally Swift had wonderful foresight in setting it up as a nonprofit. We're mm-hmm. governed by a board of directors. I've served on the board for many years, and mm-hmm. also been president of the mm-hmm. organization. Mm-hmm. And so we have about 1,100 instructors worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy certification. It requires a 2-part 7-day clinic and some other requirements. But I'm going to say it's a friendly certification mm-hmm. To encourage new instructors to begin to think of themselves as professionals and to learn more information in order to be able to teach and to be good teachers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So is there anything that you would like to tell listeners about your training that we haven't discussed?
Well, I actually came into this. I've always taught, really, since I was in college. But I also have a degree in education, and actually was a librarian for many years at mm-hmm. the downtown Toledo Library.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
wow.
So,
nice. You know, I mm-hmm. can't say that I looked ahead and planned this career. This career, for whatever reason, fell together for me. But I always encourage young people in the horse world to make sure they pursue additional education, not to just walk out of high school and mm-hmm. think that I'm going to teach horseback riding for a career. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make money in the horse world, hard to make enough money, and it's also a really hard job. You put in a lot of hours and heavy work on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I always remind young people, you know, have some additional education under your belt and start to think of creative mm-hmm. ways that you can make money with mm-hmm. horses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's good.
All right. We'll be taking a short break, and when we get back, we will enter our next segment, Canter Banter.
Our next segment, Canter Banter, is brought to you by Ram Horse Fencing and Stalls, the one-stop shop for your horse farm. Ram is family-owned and operated and has been in business for over 30 years. We welcome you to call in and speak with an expert about your next project today at 866-653-8984. Again, that's 866-653-8984.
And we're back. Today on our Canter Banter discussion, we're going to talk about traveling. Do you have any traveling tips for us?
I love to travel, and I've been fortunate to have so many opportunities. I think the most important thing is don't take too much luggage. You need almost nothing to travel. A couple pairs of dark jeans. Black is always your favorite color. Layer and keep your luggage to a minimum. Just take enough underwear and socks for the whole time you're out.
What about shoes?
I usually travel with 2 pairs of shoes just in case I get 1 pair wet. Mm. But if I'm normally doing horse things, that means 1 pair of horse shoes and 1 pair of good, sensible walking shoes for cobblestones and mud and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
So that's all I do. Plus, you want shoes that are easy to get off at airline security.
Mm-hmm.
So, right? You know, never wear a cowboy belt going through security. They're going to pick it up.
A lot of metal.
A lot of metal. But Sunglasses, a hat, and a couple of handkerchiefs. Always a pair of silk long underwear, even if you think it's going to be warm, and never, ever travel without a swimsuit, because you never know if there's going to be a hot tub or a jacuzzi or a pool.
Nice.
So,
So you ride when you are abroad, and so where, like, how do you find trails or different places to go?
If I'm going to take a riding vacation, I'll go on the web and kind of research some things, see what other horsemen have done, get some ideas. Sometimes I'm invited to take a ride, and so I always travel with boots and jeans anyway. Even if it's English, you can go to jeans in an emergency. And I usually have a helmet with me, but if not, most places will have a helmet. That's the one thing that I'm always adamant about, is when I'm overseas, for sure, because I do not want to end up hitting my head. And, you know, we're lucky in Ohio. We have soft ground, but, boy, I've been in some places where the rocks or the cactus are really serious. So I do not mess around with that. Even out west, the cowboys can laugh at me, but I've got my little helmet on.
Aw, that's pretty neat. Aw.
When you're traveling, do you travel overseas with your horses at all?
No. I did have one horse that I was hoping to qualify to go overseas in combined driving, but we didn't make the very last cut, so we didn't do it. And it was probably just as well. I'd still be paying off that debt. But, no, it's very expensive, and it's a lot of red tape to fly a horse. So I ride what people offer me.
Is there a particular ride or horses that you've driven that stands out in your mind that was like, oh, this was the ultimate, it was just wonderful? Or I'm sure there's so many of those, but is there anything that was very unique? Or
one of the best trips my husband and I took was in Ireland on the west side, on the Dingle Peninsula. And I didn't realize at that time how big their sand beaches are. So we were on a ride with about seven people, and the guide, and he was just your typical Irishman. He said, all right, he said, I'm going to put my hand up, and when I drop it, we're going to go. Oh. And we went for about a mile and a half, just top speed. What I hadn't learned up till that point in my life is you don't get behind a galloping horse because they kick sand all over you. So we have to spread out, you know, no single file here. We're going to spread out. And at the end of the ride, he'd raise his hand. Everybody'd come down. We'd take the horses into the ocean, and the water would cool them down a little bit, and then we'd ride on, and a little later in the ride, you'd see that little hand come up. And,
there you go.
And he'd drop it, and we would just go like bats out of hell. It was more fun. It was a wonderful ride.
It's cute. It sounds so cute. I could see it.
Well, thanks for coming in and doing this podcast with us. We hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast and encourage you to share with all your equestrian family and friends. You can tune into the Late Night Riders podcast show every Friday night. Each episode will be uploaded exclusively on YouTube, where you can subscribe to our channel to stay up to date with all of our latest shows. Do you have a topic you'd like to discuss? We want to hear from you. You may email us at ram@ramfence.com or feel free to leave a comment below. Thank you again for listening.
Thank you, Peggy.
Oh, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.